Mivrach, everyone. This week we have a double parsha. We know we have Chukas Balak, and there is mamish so much to talk about both in Chukas and in Balak. So yeah, put the two of them together, it's like overload. There's so many points to touch on. What we're going to try and do tonight is we're going to try and focus on a few nekudos, a few ideas in each parsha, ideas that you can certainly discuss at your Shabbos table, ideas that we hope could percolate that can actually stay with you a little bit longer. We often talk about lasok b'divrei Torah means that limud ha-Torah, growth in Torah, is not just coming to a shir and listening to a shir, or opening up a sefer or learning a seder in yeshiva or listening to a class, but it's afterwards. Is it still in your mind? So what I want to do tonight is just plant a few ideas in your mind, in your heart, in your neshama, that you will take and think about over the next few days. And the first idea, when we begin in Parshas Chukas, is a famous maisa with the Baal Shem HaKadosh, Zechus Yagen Aleinu, the founder of the Hasidish movement, that he told his Hasidim that everything in the Torah, no matter what, has relevance for all time. Everything in the Torah has relevance for all time. So Talmidim, the Hasidim, said to him, Rabbi, how is that Shayach? What about Paraduma? Where's the relevance for Paraduma today? We don't have a Para, we don't have the Efer, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Kalanim in the proper state of Tara to do this Avoda for us. How is Paraduma Shayach today, Rebbe? So the Baal Shem HaKadosh said that Para is a Lashon of Gaiva. He has a couple of Mekoros where that we see Para, Prey or Revei, perhaps Prey means to grow big, and he says that that the word para, prey, is connected to gaiva. And he said, we know that the Gemara Numa tells us that the mystery of the para aduma was that it was mitame tahorim and it was mitaher temeim. That the Kohen that would do the sprinkling was in fact tahar, and he would become tameh by doing the sprinkling. And the person who was sprinkled upon was tameh, and he became tahar through that process. So that's the mystery of the para aduma, was that it's metame tahorim and it's metaher temeim. Whatever you were, it makes you the inverse. So the Baal Shem HaKadosh told his Hasidim, you know how para aduma is relevant for all time? Because it's the same thing with gava. It's the same thing with being big, with a certain sense of arrogance. We know that there are many who talk about holy arrogance, holy chutzpah. And the Baal Shem HaKadosh says that the para aduma, arrogance, could be mitaher temeim. What does it mean that para aduma, the sense of gaiva, could be mitaher temeim? A person who looks at himself or looks at herself as tameh, as a person who's so far away from God, a person who is, who am I to talk to Hashem? Hashem doesn't want my Torah. Hashem doesn't want my tefillah. You know, there's so many great people davening. Hashem needs the chesed that I do. You know, people sometimes think tzedakah. What, my quarter's really going to make a difference? So it's to that attitude of someone who views herself as a tameh that the Baal Shem HaKadosh says that the para, you need the holy arrogance to be metaher you from your tuma, to lift you up. You have to recognize how great you are. You have to recognize, as the Simcha Bunim of Peshish famously said, that a person has to have two pieces of paper in your two pockets. That one says, Bishvili Niver Ha'olam, the other says, V'anochi Ofer Ve'efer. One is the quote from Chazal that the world was created for me. That's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that our Gemara Sanhedrin shir that used to meet Sunday mornings. We learned that Gemara, I don't know how long ago it was, but that we were that the first human being was created as an individual so that everyone could say, Bishvili Niver Ha'olam, that the world was created for me. But the other slip of paper is, Anochi Ofer Ve'efer, that I am but dust and ashes, right? Just dust in the wind, as Kansas sang. Right, so therefore, what the secret is, knowing when to have which piece of paper to take it out of your pocket. And that's what the Baal Shem says, that para aduma is the holy arrogance. But even holy arrogance, if you're already tahor, it could be metahme the tahorim. Someone who is tahor, holy arrogance could be very, very dangerous. We know, unfortunately, You know, holy arrogance leads to a lot of machlokas. Holy arrogance, when a person is tar, you know, it's like the Kotzker said, I'd much rather a Rasha who knows he's a Rasha than a Tzaddik who knows he's a Tzaddik. It's a famous Kotzkerism that, you know, a person who's a Tzaddik knows he's a Tzaddik. You have to be careful of that holy arrogance, that holy chutzpah. And that's what the Baal Shem says, that paraduma zos chukas haTorah. It's the chok of the whole Torah. It's the rule of the whole Torah. To be able to, chukas haTorah, chok means to also to chisel away, to carve away, right? That chokuk alaluchos, that the words are engraved deep. So to make Torah, zos chukas haTorah, to make Torah really a part of you, you have to know that a Jew is never too little. We can never put yourself down. Understand the importance of having holy chutzpah, how the Ribbono Shel'Olam yearns for your avoda, but at the same time, understand the danger of that holy arrogance as well. Understand the danger inherent in saying b'shvili nivra ha'olam. There are times you have to take out that piece of paper that says anochi afer ve'efer. And that's a very important teaching from the Baal Shem HaKadosh. So that's one idea right off the bat. And especially, you know, the Gemara in Sota tells us that b'ikvas of the Mashiach on the final generations before Mashiach, chutzpah yaski. And the way Rav Dessler talks, Rav Dessler in Michta Melio says that in the generations before Mashiach, where we are obviously all are now, you have to have holy chutzpah. That's the way Rav Dessler understood that Gemara and Sota, that in the final generations, you need that holy chutzpah to be able to recognize the godless of a Jew. Because in the final generations, how Jews can be maligned, how their avoda can be belittled, and that we never should take our cue from others. We have to know for ourselves who we are and how chashuv everything that we do is. That's the first yisod in this week's parsha. Second yisod in this week's parsha is a Maharal that Revolbi talks about in his Shmuzin on Emuna, in a sefer, beautiful sefer, the Emunaso Yichya, the Vadim of Revolbi on Emuna. And for those in our Kila Kedosha, we've spoken about this Maharal before that Revolbi quotes, but just a little bit of context. The context is a machlok as Rashi Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha. The pasuk in Lech Lecha says, V'hamin b'Hashem, v'yachshuveh lo tzedakah, that he believed in Hashem, and he considered it for him as an act of righteousness. So Avraham believed in the promises that Hashem gave him, that he would have a son, and he considered it for him as an act of righteousness, as an act of charity, or tzedakah, of tzedek. And Rashi says, what does it mean, v'yachshuveh lo tzedakah, that Hashem considered Avraham's faith in him as an act of great righteousness. The fact that Avraham believed that Sarah would give birth to a child for him. And the Ramban attacks Rashi. The Ramban says, are you kidding me? Avram Avinu is the source of faith for all generations. Every Jew has inside of them a nitzotz of Avram Avinu, that spark of holy faith inside each and every Jew that can never be extinguished, no matter how far a Jew goes. There is always that chance that the spark can catch on and can rupture into a raging fire. Passion for the Ribbono Shel'Olam. Every Jew has that spark. And to say that Hashem thinks Avram believing in him is such a great act of righteousness, that's crazy. What do you expect from Avram Avinu? So the Ramban reads the pasuk differently. V'hamin b'Hashem, that Avram believed in Hashem, v'yachshuveh lo tzedakah, that Avraham considered that Hashem's promise to him that you are going to have a son as an act of great charity. The Ramban says that Avram Avinu was, what Avram considered what Hashem was doing, that he was giving him a son as an act of charity, a tzedakah, that Avraham didn't deserve it. Zok the Maharal to defend Rashi against the Ramban. He says, is it so that Emunah is milsa zutrasahi? Is it really so that Emunah is such a small thing, Ramban, that you attack Rashi because Avraham having faith is an act of great tzidkus, is an act of great righteousness? He says, first of all, Sarah was an islandess, according to some. Sarah was physically incapable of giving birth. It was impossible, physically impossible. So for Avram to have emunah that Hashem promises him that Sarah is going to have a child, even though Sarah is physically incapable, so that emunah is chashuv. But the Maharal goes further, and he says, you want a proof that emunah is not a small thing? He says, look in Parshas Chukas. Because in Parshas Chukas, after Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock, so we know so many mefarshim, Rishonim and Achronim ad hayom hazeh, literally, for thousands of years, people have been debating what exactly did Moshe do wrong. So the Maharal says, look in the Pasuk. The Pasuk tells us what he did wrong. The Hashem says, Vayomer Adonai el Moshe, Vel Aaron Yan, Lo Hemantin, Bilak Disheni, Leinei B'nei Yisrael. Lachem Lo Zaviu Es Kol Azeh, El Arts Asher Nasati Lahem. Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, Lo Hemantin Bi, you didn't believe in me. The Maharal says, Moshe's sin was because of a lack of emunah. And if Moshe Rabbeinu could have a lack of emunah, Maharal says up to the Ramban, you're gonna criticize Rashi because why would Hashem praise Avraham's emunah? We see he criticizes Moshe Rabbeinu for not having emunah. Granted, Avraham was the one to discover Hashem on his own. His emunah was at the height of belief. But Moshe Rabbeinu, his emunah probably was not too shabby either, right? The guy who spent 120 days and nights without food, without drink, with God on the top of Har Sinai, my guess is his emunah was pretty rock solid emunah, right? And Hashem criticizes, Yan lo hemantim bi. So the Maharal says, don't knock Rashi for saying that it was an act of great righteousness that Avraham had emunah. It could be. Because people, we unfortunately, and again, I talk about this all the time, I think it's something that we all need to work on. Emunah is not binary. It's not one or a zero, right? It's not, I have emunah, I don't have emunah, right? You know, a four-year-old child, do you believe in Hashem? Yes, I believe in Hashem, right? Yes, yes, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Sof Yomov, you believe in Hashem? I believe in Hashem, right? Obviously, there's a world of difference between levels of emunah. And our whole life, we're supposed to be deepening and developing our emunah. Emunah is, again, it's not something that we just have or we don't have, but rather it's something that we need to work on. And just, I want to quote to you the Maharal. What does it mean to work on emunah? So let me quote you from the Maharal in Gevuras Hashem, where he discusses the sin of Moshe not having faith. Because what does it mean to have faith? He says, Perush, Kasher Amar Moshe Shimuna Hamorim Derech Kas. When Moshe said to the Jewish people, listen to me, you rebellious ones, he said it in anger. And so too, the hitting of the rock twice, that was all Derech Kas. And he said that if he really had Emunah in Hashem, if Moshe Rabbeinu at that moment, when he spoke to the rock, and again, the whole Medrash, he spoke to the wrong rock, the Maharal saying, again, you want to talk about where Moshe was faulty in emunah? The Maharal says, because when a person is at the highest levels of emunah, there is no anger. You don't get angry. You do not get angry when they're highest level of emunah. Obviously, I'm not there yet, right? Ask my kids. I'm clearly not at the highest levels of emunah. But because the idea is when a person's really, that's what the Maharal is saying. Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry, so Hashem says, La yan lo hemantin bi. You didn't believe in me enough, Moshe. There was a pigam. That's what the Maharal says. It was a blemish in Moshe Rabbeinu's emunah. So this is why we understand that one of the Sheish Mitzvahs Tamidios, one of the six mitzvahs that we always have to be working on is emunah b'Hashem. There's no end to it. There's no end to it until we leave this world. We can constantly be growing more and more in believing in Hashem, in recognizing Hashem's hand in our life, in recognizing that Hashem loves us and everything is from a place of love. You know, once we say that, we have to share one idea, you know, one wild idea. I shared this a number of years ago. You know, Chukas and Balak, for many years, I was in different camps, either Camp Mesora or Camp Kaylee. I didn't give too many shiurim on Chukas and Balak, so it's like geschmack to get back to Chukas and Balak. But I think this is one idea I actually did share a number of years ago. I don't know how many, it's not dated, but it's more than 4 or 5 years ago that I think I shared this idea from Rav Pam. Just like on the level of emunah, like what does it mean to work on emunah? So I think there's a beautiful example Rav Pam mentions in Parshas Balak. Because you know what Rashi says in Perikav Beis, Pasuk Chav Beis, when the donkey opens his mouth and tells Bilam, like, idiot, open your eyes and look. And Bilam sees the Malach in the way. And what Malach does he see? Rashi says he sees a Malach shel racham imhaya. Rashi says he sees an angel of mercy. One second. What did that angel of, how did that angel of mercy appear? With his sword drawn, ready to cut Bilam's head off. That's an angel of mercy? Zachter of Pam, what does that mean? Rashi says an angel of mercy? So Rav Pam says, yes, exactly, an angel of mercy. We don't understand. There are things that happen in life that look scary, that can be scary, that can hurt us in some ways. But at the same time, we have to understand it's Malach of Rachamim. It's a very deep idea there of Pam. And again, you're talking about very high levels of Emunah. That's not a simple thing. That's not a simple thing at all. To be able to always see Avas Hashem Osanu, to see Hashem's love for us. It's a great challenge, and of course that's one of the main challenges during the 3 weeks, which begins next week. Next Thursday is Shavasar Batamas, the beginning of Bein HaMetzarim, and that's one of the main avodas, as we've spoken about in past few weeks. We've spoken about this idea. Okay, so moving forward, because it's already a little bit late, and there's so many other things to talk about. Let's move ahead to Parshas Balak. We're going to skip another thing about from the Mesillas Yesharim, a very important idea in Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Look in the second Perek of Mesillas Yesharim. You'll see what I'm talking about. The Gemara in Baba Basra Ayin Ches. But there's something about Parshas Balak that I have to talk about, because this is something that's very close to my heart. Because my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Parshas Miketz, is one of the only parshios in the Torah that from beginning to the parsha to the end of the parsha, there is no break at all in the entire parsha. There are very, very few parshios that are like this. Meaning, look in like, say, an Arch Scroll Tanakh, wherever you see like a few letters of a break, that's known as a stuma. That's known as a closed break. And then you have a psuchi of an open break when the text just ends to the end of the line. There's no more text. So almost every parsha in the Torah has numerous psuchos and stumos, many breaks in the text. Miketz, my bar mitzvah parsha, no break. Parshas Vayetze, no break. Parshas Balak has one break. There's only one break in Balak. And there's such a deep teaching because of this break. There's such a deep teaching. If you start at the beginning of the parsha, Mamash, the beginning of Parshas Balak, and you turn, and you turn, and you turn, and you turn the pages, the break in Parshas Balak, a parsha of 104 psukim, is in the last nine psukim are a separate section, are a separate parsha, right? The last nine psukim. So in a parsha of 104 psukim, 95 psukim are all condensed without any breaks. In 95 psukim, no breaks. Aside for Vayetze Miketz, it's probably one of the biggest run-ons in the Torah, that you have no breaks in it. Why? So Chafetz Chaim says, look at the last pasuk before the break. Look at the last pasuk before the break. Perek Chavdalid Pasuk Chavhei. Vayakam Bilam Vayelech Vayoshev Lemekomo Vegam Balach Halach Ledarko. What is the last pasuk before the break? Bilam gets up and he goes, Vayashav lemekomo, he returns to his place, Vigam Balak halach ledarko, and so too Balak returns to his path. Zok to Chafetz Chaim, why is the Torah condense the beginning of the whole Bilam story? I mean, the whole Bilam story is basically one big, big section. No breaks. Why? Because the Chafetz Chaim says, the Torah is telling us, the Torah is asking us, please look at this Musar Haskel from Bilam HaRasha. Look at this lesson from Bilam. Bilam HaRasha has multiple connections and conversations with God. Bilam HaRasha has numerous prophecies. God is putting words in Bilam's mouth. Bilam hears from a talking donkey. And this was before Shrek, so it was a Chiddush. To us, talking donkey, okay, not such a big chiddush, right? But back then, a talking donkey, there was no such thing as a talking donkey. And the donkey could see an angel, and Bilam opens up his eyes, and he sees an angel with a sword, ready. Bilam has like crazy, crazy experiences. But yet what happens at the end of it all? At the end of it all, Vayakam Bilam Vayelach Vayashav L'mekamo. Bilam gets up and he goes back to his place. And those that are listening from our Kila Kadosh in Springfield, I didn't decide, I'm so excited. I'm giving my first drasha in a shul since Parshas Kisisa. You don't know how excited I am. And I'm going to try and limit it, not go for like more than 10, 12 minutes, I hope. But this is something that I'm thinking of talking about. So if you're from Springfield and you're going to be in Shul on Shabbos, just get up and leave after Aleinu. You don't have to stay for my drasha after. Maybe. I'm not sure. But listen to what's going on. Bilam goes through these crazy experiences and he remains unaffected by it. He's the same Bilam as he was at the beginning of the Parsha, as he was at the end of the Parsha. He doesn't stop to pause. Because the Chafetz Chaim quotes Rashi in the beginning of Vayikra, you know why the Torah puts the pauses in? Those breaks, the psuchos and the stumas? So you have time to reflect on what you just read. There is no reflection in the whole story of Bilam. There is no self-analysis. There is no contemplation. There is no hisboninus. Is a person who just goes through crazy experiences and just walks away the same. Walks away the same. It's like that famous story that I love to tell of Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal, the founding Eish HaTorah Rosh Hashiva, one of the fathers of the Kiruv movement. When he's giving the story, when he's giving a class in the Eish Basics, and there's a guy, everything Rav Noach is saying, you're right, Rabbi, you're right, it makes so much sense, Rabbi. Right, Rabbi, absolutely, Rabbi. And so Rav Noach says to him, tell me, my friend, are you agreeing with everything I'm saying? Are you observant? And he says, oh, no, Rabbi. He goes, what? Why are you not observant? He says, Rabbi, me and God, we have an understanding. He says, you have an understanding? What understanding do you have? He says, Rabbi, I am an avid mountain biker. And I was out in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. I'm biking up a mountain on this tiny little path. And all of a sudden, Rabbi, I'm going around the curve and comes a rugged Jeep on this tiny little path. Rabbi, I either turn inwards towards the wall in between and I get smushed between the Jeep and the mountain, or I go left off the dirt path, off the side of the mountain. I don't know how far the drop is. I turn off, I fall, he says, Rabbi, hundreds of feet. My bike falls on top of me. I get up with barely a scratch. He says, Rabbi, don't you see me and God? We have an understanding. So Rav Noach, without missing a beat, says, tell me, friend, who do you think sent the Jeep coming at you in the first place, right? Right? Who sent the Jeep in the first place? Bilam goes through so many crazy things. Doesn't get affected, accused. Tell me, how many crazy things have we lived through in the past 4 months? Do you remember Purim? Do you remember what happened after Purim? March, April, May, June. Chevre, it's July. It's July. Shabbos is July 4th. How are we going to be different? We're going through crazy things. Mom's crazy. There are other words, other synonyms, but it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, someone said that the year 2020 is going to become a synonym for crazy. You know, man, he just went 2020 on me, right? Just like to go crazy on someone. It's going to be a synonym. But tell me, did you change it all so far? Has davening been different? Has how you treat people different? This country is going through, again, upheavals that are Ayom Vinora for many reasons. Have you changed because of that? Maybe you think differently about Eretz Yisrael. Maybe like Eretz Yisrael that was so far off, maybe seems a little closer to you now. Maybe, just maybe. But understand, that's what the Chafetz Chaim says, why this Parsha is stuma. This Parsha is totally closed to remind us that Bilam does not reflect on anything that happens to him. He remains the same Bilam at the beginning of the story. And again, at the end of the story, that's what it says. Vayakam Bilam vayelach vayashav l'mekamo. He gets up and goes back to exactly where he was. Zero reflection. Zero change. Chas v'shalom, any of us should be like Bilam. God forbid, that any of us should follow that Rasha. But there's also another lesson. I think there's another very important lesson for us these times, a lesson from the Netziv. And there's a lot more to say, but we're going to end with this Netziv. The Netziv says, Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Tes, Ki Meros Tzurim Ereno Migvos Asherena Hein Am Levadad Yishkan Uvagayim Lo Yishashav. Again, the Netziv, historical context, the last Rosh Hashiva of Elazhin, late 1800s. He has two famous sons, Rav Chaim Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Those were his two sons. And the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he lived the time also of great change. He was one of the Chov Beit Zion. He was a staunch religious Zionist, the Netziv. But he says in this pasuk, Hein am levadad yishkan v'agayim lo yischashav. He says, the Jews in Galus, our instructions are mamsh right here. Hein am levadad. When you'll be a nation by yourself, when you will be unique, when you will recognize the uniqueness and the separateness of the Jewish people from all the other nations, then yishkan. Then you'll dwell with dignity, with kavod, and with menucha. But when, uvagoyim, but if you try to become part of the goyim, if you try to become enmeshed in the culture, try to become just one of the nations, to become part of the nations, then lo yischashav, you're not going to be considered at all, you're not going to be chashav, then you're going to be the shmutz to all the nations of the world. Others say, b'shem Chaim V'lajner, that if the Jew doesn't make Kiddush, the non-Jew will make Havdalah. But the Netziv, again, living at a time of great social upheaval, great world upheaval. Again, think what you're talking about. You're talking about the 19th century. Think about the unbelievable, unbelievable rupture in the ways of life that have happened in that century. And certainly from the 18th to the, from the 19th to the 20th, the Netziv is telling us, "Hein am levadad yishkan." We're not like all other nations. And there are a lot of mefarshim. If you look at many achronim, they quote Parshas Balak in essays on anti-Semitism. There's a lot to be said about this here. There's a lot to be said. We're not going to go into it. But I think what we have to recognize this as a truism of the spiritual structure of the Bnei Yisrael. That when we are levadad, when we are alone, then yishkon, we will dwell with dignity, with honor, and with peace. But when uvagoyim, lo yischashav. But when we want to be with all the other nations, when we want to be ma'urav, when we want to be mixed in with everyone else, lo yischashav. You're not going to be accounted. You're not going to be chashav. You're going to be pushed away. And this is something also, I think, that in Parshas Balak, there are very important lessons for us. You know, even just looking how Balak talks about Am Yisrael to Bilam, just look at the language, and we're not going to go into it, but it's frightening. It's frightening because you know why it's so frightening? It hasn't really changed much. It's the same way Paro talked about us. It's the same way Bilam, Balak talk about us. It's the same way they still talk about us, Chevra. And I'm debating. Should I tell the scary story, Dr. Jeff, of what Joe told me in the barber store that time? It's a little bit of a scary story, but I've been thinking about it a lot, and I'm gonna share it with you. So my barber, Ronnie, really nice Roman Catholic, Italian, and he has a friend who sits in the store a lot. He has like some type of travel business in the back of the barber shop, named Joe, also an Italian fellow, lived in South Orange for many years, then Hoboken. He actually lives now, you know where he lives? He lives in Lakewood. So funny, he lives in like an adult community in Lakewood, and he's like, Rabbi, you got to go to this place, Bingo. It's amazing, Rabbi. Everything is kosher there. But Rabbi, you got to explain to me all the different names of rabbis on the different products. I'm like, no, I'm not going there, Joe. I'm not explaining that to you. But Joe is a travel agent. He travels the world. And as he said all the time, he's been to Jewish ceremonies in South Orange. He had many, many Jewish friends. In his leather business in Manhattan, that was his main parnassa for many years. He had a Jewish partner. His partner was a Yid in his leather business in Manhattan. And so he said, Rabbi, you know, we're talking about visiting the Holy Land. And he said to me, Rabbi, did you ever visit like Auschwitz? And I said, I've never been. Eschatai ani maskir hayom. I want to visit Eastern Europe, although I'm getting less and less interested in actually visiting Eastern Europe now, I have to be honest. But he said, Rabbi, he was there, and he said, you don't know, Rabbi, how it affected me. And they're like, I can't see without my glasses. I'm like, he's like, Rabbi, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. And he shoves his arm like right under my eyes so I should see the goosebumps on his arm. And he said, like, it was one of the most powerful experiences I had visiting the Holocaust countries. Okay, well, good. The conversation moves to lighter fare, you know, other things, not talking about the Holocaust. I'm done with my haircut. I thank Ronnie. I pay him. I'm walking out. Joe says, Rabbi, one thing. Rabbi, hold on. And he comes up to me. He gets mamsh in my face. He says, Rabbi, I'm telling you this because I respect you as a man of God, as a holy person, which obviously has bad judgment there. But he says, Rabbi, I'm telling you, it can happen here. I said, what can happen here, Joe? He says, Rabbi, I'm telling you, don't think it can't happen in America. I said, Joe, what? He says, a Holocaust. I said, what are you talking about, Joe? And this is what he tells me. This is what Joe told me. Mi piv, mamish, I'm telling you what he told me. He said, Rabbi, do you know how many times I was at a table, surrounded, everyone at the table were us Goyim and Jews. We're at an event together, friends from South Orange, friends from Hoboken. We're at an event together. We're in a restaurant together, a non-kosher restaurant. Rabbi, you should only hear how the non-Jews speak about the Jews when they get up from the table. This is what he tells me. He says, Rabbi, you should only know how the non-Jews speak about the Jews when they get up from the table. It was mole pachad. I saw he was serious. He was mamash dead serious, Joe, when he told me this. And it disturbed me deeply for quite some time. And it's something that I remember very vividly. And this is a parsha. Parsha's Butluk is a parsha that, unfortunately, I wish I can say it's a thing of the past, but unfortunately it's not. And as we start the 3 weeks next Wednesday night, I think, you know, it's the time of year when we're supposed to reflect on Gullis. It's a time of year when we're supposed to reflect on where a Jew is supposed to be. And we're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to be in Springfield. We're not supposed to be in Muncie. We're not supposed to be in Cedarhurst. We're not supposed to be in these places. We're supposed to be in Yerushalayim, in Beit Shemesh, in Tzfat, in a lot, maybe according to some. Machlokas Feilat is part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, whatever, right? But this isn't where we're supposed to be. And, you know, some say we read Parshas Balak to remind us of that. Parsha's bulk is almost always the parsha right before the 3 weeks to remind us, like it was then, by Yom HaMahein, Bezman HaZeh. Remember who you are. Remember where you should be. But again, remember at the same time that even the Malach Shel Rachamim, even though it has a sword, it's a Malach Shel Rachamim. Remember that we have to be Mechazik Eremuna, that Hashem loves us, and not to fall to Kas. But most of all, please don't be a Bilam. Everything that we're going through, we should take it in, and we should metamorphose, we should evolve spiritually due to everything that we're going through. Okay? Have a good Shabbos, have a meaningful Shabbos, and it should be a Shabbos that gets us ready for the 3 weeks of really a very, very intense and a very tough avoda. One of the hardest times of the year, personally for me, and I know so many others that are on, that we learn together, of just a very tough time for us all, and Hashem should help us get through it in a meaningful way. Good Shabbos.